Hey, welcome in. This is All Ball, the All Basketball Podcast. My guest this week is Nick Baugh. Nick is a talented radio host in Omaha, Nebraska. And of course, he's a native Cornhusker, grew up in Lincoln, went to KU, then transferred to CU, to Creighton, and is an outstanding broadcaster on our Fox family of networks. We'll get to him in a second. Let me give you a couple of quick thoughts in regard to Zion Williamson. I like that Kobe Bryant finally stepped out and said, like, you made a commitment. You went to go play in college. Finish up. This is not crossing the freeway dangerous, you know? Oh, he could suffer severe injury. I think the issue is there is a sense, you can tell me if I'm wrong. You can feel free to tweet at me at Gottlieb Show. There's a sense from some people that, well, Zion shouldn't play for Duke because Duke makes money off Zion. My point has always been that colleges make money off of the success of all their students. And the one difference is with Zion, yes, Duke would make money off him, off of his name and his likeness and his talents, and potentially win a national championship, another one for Coach K. Here's the payback. He'd be part of a legacy of champions at Duke. He'd be potentially playing the Final Four. We act like everyone in the world knows who and has seen Zion Williamson play. Let me explain this to you. There's lots of people that don't watch college basketball. College basketball's ratings, I think the one he got hurt in where he played 30 seconds in, yeah, that was, that got a 3.5. That is lower than the rating for the Pro Bowl. So we act like everybody watches college basketball. Everybody knows who he is. He's going to be the number one pick. The chance to play for a national championship is playing for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times as many people, which makes your brand, the personal knowledge of who you are, even bigger. He would be a huge star coming into the NBA draft, which he may already be, but it only cements it the more mainstream America sees him play in the NCAA tournament and play for the biggest name in college basketball, which is Duke. So this idea that only Duke makes money off of Zion is not true. It is actually a very, very fair trade, even for somebody as talented as Zion Williamson. And there is something to the commitment. We didn't ask you to commit for the rest of your life. This is not the Naval Academy or any of the service academies where if you play for 2 years, you got to serve for four. Like, no, we don't do that. Simply stated, hey, you committed to play when you're in college basketball, finish the year. If you're healthy enough to play, then play. If he's not healthy, I'm okay with him sitting till he's right, but it's just a sprained knee, and I think he just scared himself. Now, what shoes he wears and how he plays, much more interesting. And if he doesn't play well, he'll get the pass because people will say, well, he's tentative. He's worried about his shoe ripping. But to the he shouldn't play, look, I hate to break it to you, but when he was playing in AAU basketball and he played in Las Vegas a couple years ago and he played against LaMelo Ball, guess what? They made money off of him. They did. And he got exposure, which helped start the building of his brand. Same thing with YouTube. And in the end, it'll all even out and he'll be worth a couple million by the end of this basketball season. He'll be worth, you know, tens of millions within the next year or two. And potentially, if he continues to improve, hundreds of millions. Let's also remember that unlike football, where if you're not playing, you can just be training, if you're playing basketball and you're not playing with a team, you're going to be training to keep your weight down, you can just as easily get hurt. What happens then? What if you're so injury-riddled, and he's not, what happens then? Let me quickly get to the NBA and something I've noticed with the Boston Celtics. Gordon Hayward was trending the way of being a perennial all-star. He'd only gotten one all-star game, but he left the friendly confines of Utah. And Quinn Snyder, who I think had done an amazing job and still is doing an amazing job as a head coach, he'd left Utah to go to Boston. Of course, as we know, a couple minutes into his first NBA game with the Boston Celtics, he breaks his leg against the Cleveland Cavaliers. There have been a lot of people talking about whether or not the Celtics are better or worse with Kyrie Irving. And part of the issue is we look at raw data and we don't look at context, right? Whether he plays or he doesn't play, we don't point out the fact that the games that he's taken off, for the most part, have been games in which they could have a couple starters sit out and still win, right? Like, congratulations, he didn't play against the Hawks, or he didn't play against the Magic, or he didn't play against, but he plays against the big boys. That's how they manage him, as he's coming back from that, from the multiple knee operations that he had that ended his season prematurely. What's not discussed is the Gordon Hayward effect. Hayward makes so much money that there's, like anything, inherent curiosity, maybe even jealousy in that locker room. And if you watch, they're just not, those guys are just not in on Hayward considering the amount of minutes and more minutes than shots he gets. Like, Gordon Hayward is getting 26 minutes a game, which is equal to Jaylen Brown. And Jaylen Brown continues to be a better player. You know, whether it's Jason Tatum or Gordon Hayward or Terry Rozier or Marcus Smart. Like, look, Marcus Smart got paid in this last offseason, so some of it's not about pay in that type of ego, but just the idea that Hayward played for Brad, I'm sure translates poorly in that locker room. He's Brad's guy. And he is, you know, a former Butler guy who did break his ankle, isn't the same player, fighting his way to get back. And so while we look for reasons, curious reasons, why the Celtics chemistry is not good as of now, there's a couple reasons. One, I think, is we cover the NBA far more ferocity than we ever did previously. But two, I think Gordon Hayward and the effect of his contract, the effect of his minutes, and the fact that he played for Brad Stevens in college, was recruited by Brad Stevens. It leads you to believe, however untrue, that he's like Brad Stevens' son. He's always going to take care of him. And that creates jealousy, and that makes it so that there's not great chemistry. Because it's pretty obvious that the chemistry as of now, is off with the Boston Celtics. Doesn't mean they can't turn that into a positive, but as of now, it's off. The Celtics thing is interesting because of Hayward, because Kyrie is still trying to figure out how to be a leader. But we also have to remember how we cover this thing. And I would guess that as you get towards the playoffs, the rotations will shorten. The minutes for Hayward, if the production's not there, will wane. And the chemistry will get better. This has actually happened for years in the NBA. We just didn't cover it nearly as thoroughly. I know, I've been doing this for 16 years. We didn't cover it like this. So I'm not selling my Brad Stevens as a genius stock. I still think the Lakers make the playoffs. And I'm fascinated to see how all the rotations come together. But it wouldn't surprise me if Toronto ends up coming out of the East. They've been close before, and now you add Kawhi Leonard, who's an absolute killer at both ends of the floor. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Golden State Warriors, in spite of the fact that the West is not as good as it's been, struggle because DeMarcus Cousins still doesn't have lift. They're different defensively with him. And their bench isn't as good as it's been. Here's the way we do things here. I want to talk this year in college basketball, but I also want to talk about you and basketball. You grew up in Lincoln, Nebraska?
Correct. Yep.
Is there a neighborhood in Lincoln? Like, I know nothing of Lincoln other than I land and the only place. Like, I think it's kind of an underrated place, but I know nothing about Lincoln. Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up across the street from Frank Solich. How about that? How about that little nugget for you? So Frank Solich, like when he would, you know, when you're out playing around, like football, basketball, whatever, in your front yard or in the driveway, like when Frank Solich turned, when his Suburban turned into my cul-de-sac, man, it was on to try to prove to Frank Solich that, you know, you were an athlete. But yeah, that's football country, as you know, Doug. I mean, it's Nebraska football 24/7, 365. My dad played wing back for Nebraska. My uncle played wide receiver at Nebraska. Like, there's Nebraska football, not only in my family, but in the area, where there's also a ton of coaching. My grandpa was a legendary high school coach and athletic director. There's at Fremont High School in Fremont, Nebraska, the gym's named after him. And so my uncle coaches high school basketball. My brother's a high school basketball coach. So there was always a ton of basketball also around me. And that's what I fell in love with. I was a all-state quarterback in high school as well, but I was just, you know, it is. I mean, when you fall in love with the game of basketball, man, it just, you can't shake it.
So, I know.
Yeah,
I tried to
it was a fun time.
I tried to explain it to my wife. My son's 9 and last year he was 8 and he was not very good. We had moved from Connecticut, and we had had a tennis court that I had that we had played basketball on as well. And so he was decent, but I was working so much in the afternoons and on weekends that I wasn't able to really coach him. And, you know, he didn't go to clinics or whatever. He didn't grow up going to camps. And so when we got out to California, he was kind of overwhelmed a little bit. And I played him up, and he didn't love it. And then now he's gotten where he's kind of good at. He's better. He's not good, but he's better. And now he's addicted. You know, he's all over
right.
it. And it's amazing because he's playing catch up just in things he doesn't know. But I get you. Okay, so why didn't you go to Nebraska? Like, who was at Nebraska when you finished up in high school? It was like 2001 or 2002? You got done with high school.
Yeah, so I graduated in 2003. It was Barry Collier.
Okay.
Was the head coach at the time, and
he sounded perfect for you. He was a two.
I know, man.
He was a two car garage, two parent in the home guy. He loved state champions. Like he was that was perfect for you.
I know you would have thought. I have my little theories on things. You know, I mean, if when you don't get, because I didn't really get recruited that hard by Nebraska at all, and I had this theory in my mind, and I'm just going to throw it at you. When Coach Collier took the job, he immediately signed three kids from the state of Nebraska. So he high school teammate of mine, Jake Muehlheisen, who was a really good player.
Yeah, I know Jake.
Then signed Wes Wilkinson, Jason DeRusso, four, and then he signed Roy Enright. So he signed one kid from Grand Island, Nebraska, two kids from Omaha. So he takes the job, and within a year or two, all of a sudden he's got four kids. Dug four kids from the state of Nebraska. And in my mind, I always wondered if he thought, man, am I really – because, I mean, Nebraska high school basketball isn't great. I wonder if he thought in his mind, I'm getting a little Nebraska heavy, and I think I maybe need to diversify this a little bit. It was either that or he just didn't think – he didn't like my game that much. And what's funny is when I see him now, so I do – obviously with the Big East and Fox, I do a lot of Butler games. And now Coach Collier and I have a really good relationship. But I'm not going to lie, when I was coming out, I was hurt and
so he didn't offer you.
He didn't Doug. He did not offer me a scholarship. He offered me to walk on, and yeah, that was it. He didn't recruit me that hard.
So Roy, who recruited you from Roy's staff?
Roy, Joe Holiday.
Yeah,
Joe Holiday,
great guy.
Was the great guy. And what's funny, and it's amazing how much things have changed. And I'm sure you can relate to this. Like, I remember me and my high school coach, we sat down and we had, this was VHS tapes. This was still when VHS tapes were a thing. And we made, I made a list of 15 schools and we put two or three of my games on 15 VHS tapes and just sent them out, right? And, you know, we got responses from like almost everyone, either like, hey, we think, you know, we like you, we think you're mid-major, or hey, we're pretty loaded at the combo guard, two guard. But that's how Joe Holiday in Kansas found me, and he watched my film and liked me, and then everything kind of took off from there. Which it's interesting to say out loud in hindsight now that, I mean, Kansas recruited me exponentially harder than Nebraska did, and I mean Kansas was coming off back to back Final Fours and all that, and what was hard was when I went back and played when I was at Kansas and went back and played Nebraska. It was one of the most ruthless 2 hours of basketball I ever played in. I mean, anytime I caught the ball, they were chanting "traitor" and booing me. And
you're
I
like, dude,
to, like,
they didn't offer me a scholarship. You wanted me to walk
yeah.
on. So
I wanted to call a timeout and grab the mic and explain all that to people. But you know, I mean, all is well that ends well. I mean, and the journey ultimately led me back to Creighton, which was a really good fit for me to play for Coach Altman.
What was Roy like to play for?
Well, see, that's the thing. Roy left right as I was coming in. So
you're behind Aaron Miles. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I come in and I commit to play for Roy. Roy leaves for Carolina, and then Bill Self comes in. And absolutely love Bill Self. I mean, he is, I think you're pretty close with him. He's, I mean, an awesome dude, unbelievable coach. And so I come in, and you know, it is when you play for someone who didn't recruit you, that's challenging, you know? I mean, it's tough, and especially when my game compared to the guys that he likes or is a little different. You know, I mean, he kind of likes defensive oriented, tough minded guards, where I was more of a, I was a space the floor cerebral guy.
You're soft. You're just soft and slow.
I was soft.
White.
Yeah, no. God almighty, Bob, you're soft. You got all that from him all the time.
Yes.
But it was unbelievable to play at Kansas for 2 years. I always tell people, like, and I'm sure with Yoki State blood pumping through you, that Kansas, you probably can never shake the hate you feel for them.
But you
respect that program.
Listen, excuse my French, they're fucking idiots. Okay, by the way, they're just the dumbest fucking people on the face of the fucking earth because they don't understand the sport. Yeah. I grew up in Southern California, and there was a time Roy used to get one kid out of Southern California every year, including Paul Pierce, who's my roommate at ABCD. Yep. You go back, and Adonis Jordan, my dad coached him, and he signed him, and there's just a litany of guys that they got. Eric Chenoweth, who was behind me, came from right down the street. He was like my kind of like my bigger little brother, playing in Orange County. So I was actually pissed that he didn't offer me. Like, I was his exact prototype point guard for how he had at Kansas.
You'd be perfect for him.
Right. And he took Ryan Robertson, who was from, much closer.
Yep.
And but the other part is that people think that, like, 20 years later, you're still bitter about it. Like, no, like, I'm a grown up. It worked out really well for me. Did I get that Kansas got all the calls at home? Like, yeah, everybody kind of knows that, right?
Right.
But I think it's an awesome place. And right? Like, there's nothing. Okay, here's an honest question I have for you. You only played about half the games. There's a lot of games you sat. I remember.
Oh,
so
no
Bill's
question.
Bill's yeah. first year, he inherited a loaded team, and they kind of fought him. I was told, like, he wanted longer practices, and Roy, Coach Williams, when he gets to February, it becomes country club.
Short.
Super super short. Get in, get your shots. Run through your stuff and get out. But what's it like to go from? Because I never experienced this. What is it like to go from being a superstar in high school, and then actually not play in games? Like be a healthy scratch.
It was. Really, really, really hard. I mean, because basketball is a rhythm sport and it's a confidence sport. I think Charles Barkley always has the great line, the only difference between a good player and a great player is confidence. And I don't care what you can do, you can kill in practice, you can kill in pickup games, you can put in a bunch of work in, on the gun, individual workouts, whatever. But you got to go do it in a game. You know that. Like, you got to go do it in a game for that confidence to really explode. And I think that's something that killed me. Like, in some ways, I don't know if I ever fully regained that swagger that a lot of us play with in high school, that F you attitude when you take the floor. Like, I'm going to show everybody what the deal is here for the next 40 minutes. I don't know if I ever fully regained that, and that was hard.
That's a great point. See, I always feel like that was kind of my thing, which was like, look, when I in AAU I played with great players, so I did a little bit of both. But by my senior year, I was also a scorer and a passer, and then in high school, I did everything. And then I got to Notre Dame, and I was trying so hard to do everything that John McLeod wanted. Then I kind of lost my game, and I got back some of that swagger the year I sat out. But then again, I was just like such a pleaser. But then you get into a role early on in college, and it's really hard to break out. Like, look,
hard to
I get people all the time like, "Well, you couldn't shoot." Like, well, do you think I would have been recruited by everyone in the country if I couldn't shoot out of high school?
It's
total confidence, mental thing, and then you're told. By people who don't understand, like, to kind of level off the attitude, whatever. But in order to, if you want to be and how tall are you?
6'2".
Yeah, to be a 6'2", or I'm a 6 foot white dude and play in the Big 12, you better have some swagger. Like, you just do, because guys are coming at you every day. And it's a great point that you go somewhere and you think, all right, I'm going to bide my time. And for me, I thought, like, look, I'm just going to do what I got to do to get on the court. And then ultimately, I'll let my game, let my nuts hang and let my game come out.
Yep,
and it's a hard thing to get back when you lose that confidence.
It's tough, and especially for me, Doug, it was like So I dislocated my shoulder the fourth game of my football season, my senior year, and I missed half my basketball season. So I'm coming back from that. Then I go to Kansas, and I basically more or less don't play for 2 years. Then I transfer and have to sit out. So, Doug, we're talking about like almost 3 full years of me not really playing a lot. And my rhythm was gone. My timing was gone, and my confidence was a little bit shook. And then the other thing, too, was I think subconsciously, I tried not to be like this, but I think there was an element of I walked into Creighton thinking, okay, I've just dealt with Keith Langford and Aaron Miles, and you know Kirk Heinrich can come back in the summer. I'm like, I'm gonna come in and I'm gonna run things here.
Yeah.
And there was a cat named Nate Funk at Creighton that was a big time mid major guard. I mean, I'm talking big time.
I remember.
And in a lot of ways, the my redshirt year at Creighton, the Valley got 4 teams in the NCAA tournament. Think about that. 4 teams from the Valley went into the NCAA tournament. Like, the Valley was really good. Southern Illinois was really good.
Yep.
So I'm willing to say out loud that it was the Valley was better than I thought it was. I think the 6 inches between my ears was an issue for me kind of throughout my career, and I kind of got it back my senior year a little bit. But then, you know, then I started to have – I was battling plantar fasciitis. I started to get kind of banged up and all that. But, you know, everybody's got their story to tell on kind of explaining the career. And, they're, you know, I mean, listen, excuses or reasons.
No.
Branches from the same tree.
You don't got to go there with me. Like, again, this is where this podcast is not for civilians. It's for ball guys, right? Like, if you're into ball.
Right.
And, yeah, it's like by the time you get your confidence back, now all of a sudden – Your body's letting you down. Like for me, by the time I got my confidence back, you know, I was already kind of into broadcasting, and it was really hard. And then I was like, shit, you know.
Yeah. What are you doing? What do I do? Do I commit to broadcasting? Do I want to play? And then Coach Altman always. I think Coach Altman had this. And the other thing too is you talked about like trying to do everything your coach told you to do. I think Coach Altman wanted me to be like a charge taker, tough guy. And that really wasn't my game, you know, and so you get into a horrible place where you're kind of fighting your role.
Yeah.
And you'll just never win that battle. Like it's one of those things where I want to tell every kid playing out there, if you want to change your role, grow out of your role, like be a star and be amazing at your role to the point where you almost have to graduate to that next role. Does that make sense? So like, if you want to, you want to be an unbelievable starter contributor, will kill it off the bench to the point where you're embracing everything you do to where the coach goes, okay, well, we got to give this guy more opportunities. We got to give him more minutes, and then things will build it up like that. I mean, the whole fighting your role is the dumbest thing you could ever do as a player.
Yeah. I also think, and I don't know if you had this, like I would work on my shooting and my game. And then we get into the season and you know, you have a girlfriend, you have school, you have all this other stuff, and all that work you did, you still get in the gym. Like, I think guys now get in the gym a lot more because they have the ability and facilities, and they got the gun machine, and they got, you know, managers galore, whatever. But again, these are some excuses, some explanations. Some of it's just on me. Just I look back and I didn't, you know, I didn't necessarily stop working, but I wasn't working as hard in season as I did in the preseason. And you know, when your confidence starts to wane and then the results aren't as good, then you're like, well, fuck it, I'll just pass and play defense and let the rest kind of take care of itself. It's a fascinating thing. And it's, do you have kids, right?
Yeah, I have a 3-year-old daughter.
It's an amazing thing to have a son. And you know, like he asked me, like, well, why didn't you play in the NBA? And I don't know how much I want to get into his head, but what I told him was like, well, I didn't think I could shoot. And he's like, well, could you? I was like, well, yeah, I could. I just didn't think I could shoot. I said, you know, you can't ever let anybody tell you. You got to always believe no matter what you're doing. But I don't want to get too much into his head and tell him that, you know, that I mind screwed myself, but I did. But it's an amazing thing to watch a kid kind of try and figure it out. And then he's going to ask you. And, you know, the good thing is, with the exception of the shooting thing, people tell him I was a much better player than I was. So that puts a little bit of pressure on him. But it's a fascinating thing to go through, and I think that most of us, you know, it's like, did you go play for the right coach? Did you go play at the right place? Did you have the right experience? Did you leave at the right time? Like when you left Kansas, the right decision? Was Creighton the right place? I don't know. Let me ask you this about Nebraska. What do you think happens there? I mean, you have your own show in Omaha.
Yeah.
They've built incredible facilities. It's a program that, you know, again, you got to be inventive as a recruiter. Tim's shown the ability to take them to the tournament. Obviously, he's coached other places and been good. He's a great guy. But they made a huge investment in an arena and in a practice facility. And, you know, I think people want better results than what they've gotten in spite of the injury. What do you think happens there?
Yeah, I think, first of all, when the fan base starts to turn on you, that's a hard thing to reverse. And it feels like that has happened, where the fan base has slowly started turning on Coach Miles, and that negativity snowball is humming down the mountain right now. And some of it is hard from Coach Miles' standpoint that, you know, Sean Eichhorst was the athletic director that didn't hire him, but then Sean Eichhorst hires Mike Riley. That's a colossal failure. Now, so he's two athletic directors removed from the guy who hired him.
Right.
And it almost feels like Coach Miles has coached on the hot seat for three straight years. And you know this, Doug, because you get it. Like, that is a program killer, man. Like, he has the shortest contract of any coach in the Big Ten. That hurts recruiting. I think Tim has said he went on Jeff Goodman's podcast and talked about how when you're on the hot seat, you maybe coach a little bit different. He allowed a guy, Jordy Schmonga, big kid, who quit the team for 2 days to come back. And I think he felt like that was a decision that was based out of almost hot seat stuff. And so I think in his defense, I do think the fact that there's been a lack of support from above has hurt. But at the end of the day, you know, it's year seven. He's gone to the tournament one time. And the thing that I think kills him right now is, you know, he went to the tournament his second year. The next year, he brought back Taran Petaway, Walter Pitchford, pretty much everybody. And they fell off a cliff and didn't even make the NIT. Then this year, you know, last year they went 13-5 in the Big Ten. Big Ten was down. They didn't get into the NCAA tournament. But they returned everybody, and this year they've kind of fallen off a cliff here over the past month and a half. So the two times they had good years, they didn't follow it up with sustaining it. And that's the true mark of a program, man.
Can you
sustain it? A lot of people can have a cup of coffee up top, but can you sustain it?
Yes, also if you return your guys. I saw you tweet out something about Penn State, who'd played everybody tough. And I don't know if they make a change there, but, you know, like, look, Penn State lost their best player, lost a couple other. I mean, they're a completely different team, whereas the difference with Tim, and I think we both like Tim and think he's a good coach,
but the difference is
that returning or the meat of your team, they've had these bizarre kind of failures the following season, which is the odd part. Let me follow up with this. You know, I always thought that Dana would only, you know, Dana left for like a week to be Arkansas's head coach. I always thought Iowa was the other job, you know, because he's originally from there. Iowa would be the job that he'd take. You know, you got the Oregon thing. He took him to the Final Four, but he just doesn't seem like an Oregon guy. And he keeps having these one and done guys, and he doesn't really have the success he has with guys or program guys in his program. I'm just wondering if you think that if Dana would come home and coach the other team in Nebraska.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. It wouldn't surprise me at all. Now, with that said, you know, because that's always kind of been the thought. I think there was some thought when Miles was hired. I mean, almost every single coaching change they've made over the past two, three coaches, there was always the chance that Dana Altman was going to get the job, but he really never got a phone call. But I was emceeing an event this summer where Kyle Korver and Dana Altman went into the Creighton Hall of Fame, and I'm sitting there watching Coach Altman speak to this, you know, room full of Creighton people, and there was this moment where I'm sitting there going, God, would he do it? Would he go to the other side? Because Creighton and Nebraska, it's a big rivalry in the state. I do think there's enough time removed from his time coaching in Omaha, and Creighton's in a good place now. They move to the Big East. And I don't think the fan base would necessarily feel terrible about it. And listen, Dana Altman is born and raised Wilbur, Nebraska. And that's big red country. And I think he's a guy, as you said it, I mean, Oregon's the flashiest university in the country. And Dana Altman is the complete opposite of that. Right. There is an element of, I totally agree with you. I mean, has the guy ever worn anything other than a white button-up dress shirt? Like, the dude is, everything about Oregon is the complete opposite of Coach Altman. And so I think, you know, his family's from Nebraska. His wife's family's from Nebraska. I think he always wants to retire in Nebraska. All his friends are here. Like, there are a lot of there's a lot about the taking the job outside of basketball that makes sense.
And then the basketball job is a lot better than it used to be. I mean, it's still a hard job.
Yes.
But I mean, they used to play in a different building. Now you got an unbelievable facility, right? And you know, his name credibility would buy him all the time he needs. And plus, if it doesn't end up happening, he retires and rides off into the sunset. It does. You know, I don't want to fire Tim again because Mike Lewis is a dear friend of mine. And I think they're good. I think they're a great guy and good people. But, you know, this is the business. And
it's the nature. Yeah, it's the nature of the business.
And it's what, and by the way, it's what everybody listening to this pod actually talks about, which is, it's the weird thing about a lot of guys in the business, which is they'll say, like, I can't believe Goodman has his hot seat or whatever. Like, hey, dude, the second I text you, you're like, did you hear this job's coming open and that job's coming open? Like, well, we're not allowed in the business to talk about it.
Right. I mean, it's the thing about Nebraska, real quick, about that job. Is a lot of it is however. First of all, I'm not sure. Have you been to the new arena? Have you been to Pinnacle Bank and done a game there yet? Have
no.
you seen it at all?
No, I saw when it was being built. I did games when it was being built.
You know how it is. There are certain power conference jobs where the arena's dead. It's half full. There's no energy. Nebraska, that it's been top 10 nationally in attendance for the past couple of years. You would have no idea when you're at a home game that Nebraska, now that Northwestern won a tournament game a couple years ago, that Nebraska is the only power conference school to never have won an NCAA tournament game based on the environment. Like, it's rocking in there, Doug. Like, it is packed. And it's
they still leave early like they used to? They always used to. Everybody used to say it's like a fire alarm.
I don't know what engineer built it this way or architect where everybody, to leave, you have to, like, walk down onto the court and, like, walk out. So it's, like, it looks bad on TV, too, because you can see everybody kind of funneling down. And it's all in the eye. You know, you can look at that job and be scared off and spooked by the lack of success the coaches have had. But at the same time, you can look at it and go, man, all we got to do is get to the tournament, and if we win a game, they're going to build a statue of
Correct.
Me outside of this brand-new arena because you are instantly – I mean, if Nebraska goes to the tournament, wins a game, it's the best season in Nebraska basketball history. And when that's the at least initial bar of things, that's the one thing about, you know, whether it's the UCLA job or whatever, like the expectations are something you always got to take into consideration when you take a job. And with Nebraska, that bar is not necessarily too high.
Marquette loses to Villanova. How good is Marquette? Wojo actually asked me this question, and so I think he downloads the podcast. How good do you think they are?
I think they're. I think they're a team that is going to need the right matchup. I think just like, and you can say that about a lot of teams, but I think the really good teams are kind of matchup proof, if that makes sense.
How many teams are there that are matchup proof this year, though?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think
my thing is, I think I feel like they're a guard away. Like, if Kobe McEwen was eligible this year, like, I don't think he's last year at Utah State, he was as good as what his reputation will be leading into Marquette next year. But they had somebody else other than Marcus who could handle the ball, who could make a couple plays, right? And the Hauser boys are awesome, awesome. And I love, you talk about, succeeding in your roles, whether it's Siakam or Theo John, like, those guys have improved, but they also totally accept, embrace, and thrive within their roles. But it's kind of like, look, Marcus Howard, they run everything for him, and then the Hauser boys can post, they can shoot, and they can play off of him, but it feels like they need one more guy to handle the ball, and they just don't have that.
Yeah, I think, you know, Annam has gotten better, but he's still not an overly dynamic guy creating. You know, he's a guy that probably needs a close out, you know, a kick close out to really go make a play, or, mm-hmm. you know, a weave to get downhill kind of a look. I'm with you. And I watched that Utah State transfer in practice. He was Miles Powell in the scout team, and dude was cooking.
Yeah.
So he's a really good player. But I'd agree. I like Marquette. I mean, because the other day, Marcus Howard is – I mean, you got the fact that this dude can go for 40, 50 any night.
Yeah, it's
and, you know, they do have guys that – it's not like you can just punk you can just play way up. Like with Seton Hall, you can totally sell out to Miles Powell, and they just don't have a ton of guys that can score, and the other dudes on the floor.
Right.
I mean, you can't just give Joey Hauser 10 standstill threes. You know, you can't give those guys easy looks. But I'm with you. There is an element of they feel like they're a ball handler short, but I think they've really improved defensively. I think they totally have embraced who they are. And when you got a guy like Howard, I mean, anything's possible. And when they've beat good teams, I mean, Buffalo's a really good team. Howard went nuts in the second half, had 40 in the second half. They beat a Kansas State team who, as you know, that's a bunch of grown men defensively that Howard torched. Like they're a team that I don't love to make a deep run, but it also wouldn't stun me because they got the stud in Howard.
Tonight, at the time of this recording, you're gonna call Old Dominion against UT San Antonio, and I've seen both in person. I've done some CUSA games, and the UTSA guards, Keaton Wallace and Javon Jackson, dude, they're fun. They combined average like 44 points a game. ODU is really good defensively. BJ Stith is their stud. Of course, his dad Bryant is on the staff. Played for Jeff Jones at Virginia. It's kind of a little bit weird, right? But that both brothers mm-hmm. and the dad played for the coach. Like, and he doesn't. Maybe it's because I was recruited by Jeff that I don't feel like there. And he's that old. But I guess he is that old. This is a league that's produced teams that won NCAA tournament games. Really, one team that's won NCAA tournament games the past couple years. Middle had it rolling. How is ODU good enough to win a game in the tournament?
Absolutely. I mean, they're big. They're tough to play against because they control tempo, and they got what you want in terms of what you chase as any program. They got two senior veteran guards that are 1,000-point scorers that aren't going to be afraid of any moment. And the thing that makes them kind of unique is with BJ Stith, anymore it's hilarious to watch people try to defend like long curls and defend pin downs. People are that's become the unique thing.
Yeah.
Like now everything is ball screen,
yeah.
Pick and pop, you know, spread it out. Old Dominion's unique in the sense that they'll do some ball screen stuff with Ahmad Kaver, their point guard. But they're really doing a lot of different things with Stith, running him off of curls and pin downs and different things, and it's tough for people to slow him down. So I think they're good enough. I mean, they're outstanding defensively. I think they're top 10 nationally in field goal percentage defense, which is something that I don't scoring defense. A lot of that has to do with your tempo and your pace. I mean, at least I'm a field goal percentage defense guy, and so the fact teams don't shoot a high percentage on them. I don't think they're a team that can necessarily make a run to the second weekend, but you know they're the type of team that would be a tough one to see if you saw them in the first round because of their tempo and their style.
Zion goes down with a sprained knee. I'm guessing he's probably healthy. Do you think he should play?
Man, Doug. Now listen. I know I'm preaching to the choir, but sometimes you need a choir to preach to. Like, what are people talking about? With the whole shut it down stuff. Like, I don't want to be disingenuous. Do I understand that? Can I wrap my mind around the other side of it? I suppose. But this isn't like Christian McCaffrey sitting out of the Little Caesars Bowl.
Sun Bowl.
Yeah, but, you know, I can wrap my mind around that. You know what I mean? Like, it's a game. It's not a championship. You're a running back. It's like you're going to get hit 30 times in a game. Like, Zion, Zion, they're still playing for a national championship. And I just do not want to live in a world where I'm going to say out loud that I don't see any value in that at all.
Well, just the finance. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just the idea of people like, well, there's no value in it. Yes, there is. You win a national championship, your brand and likeness, I don't want to say they double, but you become, like, we all think everybody knows who Zion is. Like, that's just not
right.
They just don't. I mean, the power. Look, I worked at CBS and for Turner, and I had done it for 10 years, done the NCAA, done all the college basketball for 10 years, and I can tell you, the first time I was on CBS, I'd go to the airport and be like, I didn't know you'd, and like I had no idea. Like, what do you mean you don't have no idea? Because people watch the tournament that have never watched basketball before. That's the beauty of the tournament.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead. And then just the competitive aspect to it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to use Zion, the other thing, too, and the problem is people have taken a bunch of different conversations and tried to slam it into this one, Zion should shut it down. It's like, okay, we can have the one-and-done conversation. We can have the pay players conversation. Like, this is not necessarily applicable to all that. I mean, because to me, the thing, if you want to use Zion Williamson as a reason why the one and done should go away, like, that's, dude, you got the wrong guy. If anything, he's the argument for going to college, because he was not the number one pick 3 months ago. RJ Barrett was. Now Zion's the number one pick. He was a YouTube sensation.
Right.
And as you said, like, not everybody knows who this dude was. Now he's getting 24/7, 365 chatter on Fox, on ESPN, and all these different networks. If he wasn't playing for Duke and playing college basketball, that's not happening. Like, so his profile has increased even more. So I just, he's the example for going to college. And then the other thing I don't understand, too, is that, okay, so he shuts it down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is he still gonna play basketball?
Of course,
right? He's gonna work out.
Right.
What I don't understand. I think Mike DeCourcy wrote about this, and it's spot on. It's like, so are we saying that it's okay? Like, if Zion Williamson gets hurt playing pickup on a random Saturday morning, that's cool. But if he gets hurt playing NC State or whoever, like in Cameron Indoor, that's not okay. He's gonna continue to play basketball, and there's a chance he's gonna get hurt. I don't get it at all.
I don't either. Hey man, enjoy Virginia. It's a cool arena there, and let's catch up again soon. Next time you're in LA, beer on me or coffee on me. I'm more of a coffee guy, but I love Omaha. I may pop in and see
you. Yes, sir.
Yours and Hoops. We'll talk soon.
Hey man, I love the podcast. I listen to it all the time. Really appreciate you having me on, Doug.
I want to see if you listen to yourself. That'll be awkward.
It will be.
All right, last thing in terms of college basketball. I understand that they play in the West Coast Conference. I fully get that they've been so ridiculously dominant, it points out. Actually, I got two things I want to get to with college basketball. First is, how do we get to this point where the Pac-12 teams like Arizona State, who was actually good in the non-conference, did lose at home to Princeton after beating Kansas. Like, their success in conference and their improvement somehow gets marginalized, as opposed to, say, St. Mary's, which has played its way into the bubble, which hasn't offered any sort of level of competitiveness with Gonzaga. Like, beating up on average WCC teams, St. Mary's is not an NCAA tournament team. I think Arizona State is. I frankly think if Oregon State can beat both Arizona and Arizona State this week and then beat at least Washington State on the road, maybe they lose to Washington. All right, so you go 3-1 down the stretch and win a game in the Pac-12 tournament. I think they're an NCAA tournament team. I'm looking at this bubble and these bottom teams, and we're making excuses for teams that have had bad seasons. Well, they play in great conferences. I agree. Good conferences against good conference schedules. But if you're 2 or 3 or 4 games below 500, sorry. Sorry. And then we're also bearing the lead. I think Duke is outstanding. And I think some of their younger players have gotten better. But Gonzaga beat them in Maui, and Gonzaga has gotten better. We keep searching for reasons to put Virginia ahead of Duke. Look, if Zion Williamson's playing, Virginia's better than Duke. How do I know? They played twice, and they're better. And I think they're going to continue to get better. I still think Virginia's a Final Four caliber team, but don't tell me that they're the second best team if Zion's playing. If Zion's not playing, Duke ain't winning this thing, not with two scorers. No way. and not enough shooting. They might not have enough shooting anyway. And if you don't have Zion, you just don't have enough. But Gonzaga is your best team. Start there, and then every other conversation can take place. All right, this is going to do it for All Ball. My thanks to Nick Baugh. Thanks to you for downloading, subscribing, and rating the show. Reminder, listen to my radio show daily, 3 to 6 Eastern Time, 12 to 3 Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app. Until next time, I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is All Ball.